Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. House leaders of both parties stood in rare election year unanimity Wednesday, demanding that the FBI surrender documents it took and then remove agents involved in the weekend raid of a congressman's office. House Speaker Dennis Hastert and Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said in a statement that the Justice Department must immediately return the papers it unconstitutionally seized. The leaders said that the congressman, William Jefferson, a Louisiana Democrat, should then cooperate with the investigation. Both parties have protested the Saturday night search of Jefferson's office on Capitol Hill, which they said violated the Constitution's separation of powers doctrine. FBI agents searched Jefferson's office in pursuit of evidence in a bribery investigation. The search warrant, signed by U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan, was based on an affidavit that said agents found $90,000 in cash stashed in the freezer of Jefferson's home. Under intense bipartisan fire from Capitol Hill, Veterans Affairs Secretary Jim Nicholson said Wednesday he was outraged by his agency's decision to keep the theft of veterans' personal data quiet for 2 weeks. Nicholson said, quote, "I will not tolerate inaction and poor judgment when it comes to protecting our veterans," end quote. He said that he asked the department's inspector general to expedite an investigation to determine who was responsible for the time delay in revealing the burglary. "You're doing a heck of a job, Nikki." The White House press secretary, Tony Snow, said Bush had, quote, "full faith and confidence," unquote, in Nicholson. Snow originally had declined to issue a statement of support in the president's name, but then said he wanted to clarify his remarks. As concerns build over increased tensions between the United States and Iran, some Democrats in Congress are beginning to mount opposition to a preemptive nuclear strike, according to a RawStory.com report. Members of the House Democrats' Progressive Caucus are holding unofficial hearings and gathering signatures for a letter to President Bush in hopes, they say, of attenuating the risk of nuclear confrontation. Responding to reports that phone companies are turning over records related to Americans' telephone calls to the National Security Agency, the American Civil Liberties Union today launched a 20-state Don't Spy on Me campaign to end government surveillance programs they claim are illegal. ACLU affiliates in 20 states today filed complaints with public utility commissions or sent letters to state attorneys general and other officials demanding investigations into whether local telecommunications companies allowed the NSA to spy on their customers. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights brings you this word of caution about the side effects of psychiatric drugs on children. Glenn McIntosh's daughter reacted adversely to a drug she was given for depression.
Her personality changed, her behavior changed, and it became a downward spiral. She would start feeling urges to throw herself out a window.
Get the facts. Report psychiatric abuse. Visit www.cchr.org today. That's www.cchr.org.
A campaign by gun rights activists to make it easier to use deadly force in self-defense is rapidly winning support across the country as state after state makes it legal for people who feel their lives are in danger to shoot down an attacker, whether in a carjacking or just on the street. The law has spurred debate about whether it protects against lawlessness or spurs more crime. Supporters say it's an unambiguous answer to random violence, while critics, including police chiefs and prosecutors, warn that criminals are more likely to benefit than innocent victims. The Senate voted overwhelmingly Wednesday to limit debate on election year immigration legislation, clearing the way for final passage later this week of a bill that calls for tougher border security as well as eventual chance at citizenship for millions of men and women in the country undocumented. The vote to advance that measure was 73 to 25, 13 more than the 60 needed. Despite the controversy surrounding the bill, the outcome was not a surprise. Even some of the bill's opponents said they were satisfied they had been given ample opportunity over the past week to try and give the bill a more conservative cast. Fighting in rugged southern Afghan mountains killed at least 24 militants and 5 Afghan forces, while the U.S. military acknowledged Wednesday that the Taliban have grown in strength and influence in recent weeks. The violence came after a week of some of the most deadliest violence since the Taliban regime's ouster in 2001. As many as 336 people have died, mostly militants, according to Afghan and coalition figures. The tiny Gulf state of Qatar, famed mainly for having the Arab world's largest reserves of natural gas, added another record to its fame Tuesday, one of the world's most expensive telephone numbers. The winning bid was $2.75 million. The winner, who made the highest bid 10 minutes into the auction, declined a request for interviews. Eight people took part in the auction, organized by Qatar Telecom, to help raise funds for charity, paying 3,000 Qatari rials, or $824, per ticket. The number? 666-6666. This has been News from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head-On with Bob Kincaid. Head-On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head-On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And why not? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, your late in the day. Maybe. See, the time zones, that's the thing with being worldwide now. Good evening doesn't work. Hey, howdy. It's your daily confrontation with the facts. There, how's that? Does that work? Okay. And, of course, insofar as it is also Wednesday, you know what else that means here.
The Afternoon Discussion Club. We are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Darn tootin'. That means it's prayer meeting edition on Head On. And I'm loaded for bear tonight, okay? Yeah, plenty of real news out there. And one that I find just disturbing. I know. Bomb Iran. And, you know, Congressman Jefferson. $90,000 in the freezer. And won't. Now, see, we're putting ourselves out there as the party of a return to something approaching accountability and a party approaching something close to decent, uncorrupted. I'm not going to prejudge this guy, but you know what? He needs to do the right thing. He needs to step down from, Ways and Means? Yeah, he definitely needs to step down from that. Don't you think? Okay. That's a disturbing. And the background thing where, the jackbooted thugs of the FBI went marching into his congressional offices. It's a clear violation of separation of powers, but I tell you what, when I see J. Dennis Hastert and Nancy Pelosi standing together carping about something, I can tell you something. The reason J. Dennis Hastert wouldn't defend William Jefferson if his life depended on it. But maybe he's finally seeing the ugly, seedy side, like there's another one, of the Bush administration. And suddenly the idea of having the FBI rooting around in his drawers, is a little bit more than he's prepared to tolerate. Because there's lots of closets in a congressional office. And, you know, the skeletons hang there like suits, right? Yeah. So, you know, there's that. There was the address of Prime Minister Ehud Olmert to a joint session of Congress today. Yeah, I know some people laugh when you say joint session of Congress. Oddly enough, it convened at 4:20. No, I'm kidding. There's that, and we can talk about it. But, you know, last night we had a brief reference in the program to the ongoing, you know, I mean, it's not all politics all the time. It's not all George Bush all the time, although, you know, the loathing George Bush does take up a lot of my time. But sometimes we talk about other things. Sometimes we talk about my beloved West Virginia University Mountaineers. Sometimes we talk about the NFL. Last night, we talked about the NFL. And that being the case, you know, I kind of enjoy that. But then today, just as sure as God made little green apples, what happens? I hear these rumblings that people are approaching Jeb Bush to be, oh, no, commissioner of the National Football League? No, please. Because you understand that, and I think probably a lot of people understand, that if Jeb Bush became commissioner of the NFL, that would mean I could never watch another game for so long as he was commissioner. Because it would just be another thing that had been ruined for me by the stinking, corrupt, dirty, rotten Bush administration. Fortunately, although, you know, whether or not one can take a Bush at his word is open for debate, especially in light of the fact that Jebby's the one who looks like that hateful old beast, his mother. Jeb says he's not interested. He said, I'm flattered that I'm governor of the state of Florida and I intend to be governor until I leave. Well, there's some brilliance. You know, they always said he was the smart one. But he says, that's January 2007, and I'm not going to consider any other options other than being governor until I finish. So we can only hope. And being prayer meeting edition, we can pray. Those of us who enjoy Sunday afternoons on the couch as autumn slides into winter, and, you know, the people contemplate playoffs and Super Bowl berths and things like that, and whether or not the Steelers will repeat and get their sixth Super Bowl ring, which I think there's a decent chance of. Wouldn't it be a shame to have all that taken away and just destroyed and yuck? But the scary part is that an NFL, this is the part about the story that is disturbing to me. According to Sports Illustrated, the NFL sent an emissary to ask Jebby if he'd be interested in replacing Paul Tagliabue, who knocks off in July. The NFL did that. Somewhere in the NFL is a moron. Somewhere in the NFL is someone who has apparently not seen a presidential poll. Because it's not just, you know, it's not just George Bush we despise. It's that whole bloody-fisted, dirty, rotten, cheating, stinking Klan. From Poppy and his, you know, from bailout Bush and his, you know, what the hell is that? That a barcode, huh? And Barbara, you know, old pick a reason to despise Barbara. To Dimebag Laura. To George, of course. To Neil, I got VD in Thailand while I was married to my wife. To Noel out there, you know, chewing up Oxycontins or whatever for the refreshing burst of flavor. To Jebby's son, oh, what is that little cretin's name, who got busted public intox down in Texas. It's the whole gang of them that we despise. Somebody needs to I don't know, give a clue, smack across the back of the head, whatever, to somebody at the NFL, and you know you're gonna turn off half of the NFL fans in this country because we don't need it any more politicized than it already is. So for the time being, I'm crossing my fingers. I'm really really hoping that Jebby is not interested in being an NFL commissioner. Because if he is, oh God, how painful. If he is, I'm done with the NFL. Ew, that's just horrifying. Okay, so it's coming up on 16 minutes after the hour. That, you know, those are the things that are on my mind. I'm a little stiff and sore this afternoon. I've done some brush cutting today, and you know, stuff Dad can't do. And I've had fun doing it. And I'm really, really excited about tonight's program because I have some right-wing religion industry lunacy that is just going to light this place up like a house of fire. And hopefully there will be your phone calls as well to 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. And that's what we'll do, phone calls, when we come back. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
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 Everybody's gone in the cotton and the corn. Didn't leave nobody but the baby.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together, we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible, a cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
And why not on this prayer meeting edition of Head On? I'm Bob Kincaid, and like I said, I've got a stack for you. But among other things in the news, don't forget. Guess what? They're the Republicans still. You know, they never. You gotta give them an A for effort. They never give up. They're still. They've got new bills to advance to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Stupid, 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 stupid people. How about putting windmills in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge? I hear there's some the big winds that blow across the frozen tundra, and I'm not talking about Green Bay since we started with the NFL. Let's go to the phones. Luke is with us from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, you're Head On.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I just tell you what, you know, it's just amazing sitting and watching this stuff with the house. It's like, isn't it amazing when it's our Fourth Amendment rights, you can't get them up off their butts? But by golly, when it's their Fourth Amendment rights, they're wanting to drag the FBI director in front of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, it's their ox getting gored, man.
Well, the one that got to me was, isn't it amazing how they go into William Jefferson's office? But good old Duke Cunningham, who has his menu of bribes printed on his own congressional paper, stationery.
No.
Amazingly enough, they didn't go into his office when that happened. You know, to go look at what he was up to, you know.
No, no.
If that menu's there, wonder what else has he got in his office. You know.
Well, it's not there anymore, you can rest assured.
No, but you know what I mean. It's like, if they even had a clue that was in there, you know, why weren't they in his office going through his records?
Well, they weren't interested
enough to keep the other records there. If he keeps
yeah,
them
well,
you.
Well, or in the freezer.
Oh, I tell you what, it's one of those. Now they're talking like the Steve and they were talking on ABC that apparently part of one of the investigations is starting to look at our friend Denny Hastert. That apparently when Denny has written a few letters over the years trying to do some stuff about some Indian casinos.
Oh, yeah, Jay Denny. Jay Denny has a lot of problems of his own, and I think that's one of the reasons that he whistled Nancy Pelosi over and said, let's have a bipartisan press conference about how pissed off we are about this.
Well, that, and I mean, you know, you were talking a minute ago about Jeb. It's like, Jeb, what do you know about the NFL? Have you ever seen a game? You know, I'd just be curious. It's like, what do you think you would bring to being the NFL commissioner? I mean, what's your experience in the NFL? Watching, that's about it, as near as we can tell.
Well, I didn't know they were scraping the bottom of the barrel. I'm sending in a resume, Luke.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like you say, I mean, there's got to be some old retired coaches here and there that they could pick that I'd have a lot more faith in.
Oh, they could dig up Vince Lombardi and prop him in the corner. I mean, that's just mean. But no, seriously, I mean, I've got as much qualification for being an NFL commissioner as Jebby Bush does.
That's what I mean. I mean, at least show me where you've worked in the industry or something. I mean, really, like you say, it'd be like one of us doing that. It's like, you know, what do you ever do? If I watch the game, it's like, God.
I like the cheerleaders.
Yeah, they dress pretty, don't they? Oh, I heard
them court. Go ahead.
Well, I heard from your setup. I have a feeling you're going to talk about the 2,000-pound man sooner or later.
No, I know. Is there a 2,000-pound man out there?
No. Mr. Pat Robertson.
Oh boy, I missed this one. I was so busy dealing with Baptists and so forth that I completely ignored dear Pat. What's he done?
Oh, there was something I heard part of it on Tom Hartman's today, where he was talking about Pat's making this claim that he can leg press because he drinks this special mix now that he's selling. He can press 2,000 pounds. And Tom was sitting there going, you know, we checked the records, and the guy that holds the world record of Paris is 1,940-something pounds, and he busted blood vessels in his eyes when he did it. But Pat Robertson says he can leg press a ton.
Well, but this has the concentrated strength of Jesus in it.
I know. It's like, you know, it's like I always loved the Robin Williams used to do one of his comedy bits. He always said, I want to be around if Jesus ever comes back, because he just said, I want to be there when they tell Falwell and Robertson that he's back. So, Jesus is back and he says he wants to see you. Bye.
Where did I say to build the water slide?
It's like there's going to be a list of people, starting with Pat and Jerry and working their way down, you know.
Oh, you got to understand, he'd never make it to the United States. He'd be in Guantanamo, in Club Gitmo before he could say, thou art forgiven.
Well, you know what I mean? It's one of these things. It's like, so every time you turn around, now the big thing you're going to see for the next 2 days, I was watching, just flipping two channels while I was waiting, and I didn't mean to actually hit it, but I hit the button and I went over to headline news for a minute and saw Glenn Beck. And I throw a pillow over my head for a few minutes. You know how it is. But
yeah, that's one of those things where you have to sit and breathe into a sandwich bag for a little bit, isn't it?
Oh, but what I'm going to say is you got to watch for the next couple of weeks. You're going to see every scientist who actually, if you hunt them back through their background, somehow is being paid by Exxon or something, telling you there is no global warming.
I'm finding that. I'm seeing that already, Luke. Just because Al Gore's movie's being released, the whole sleazy PR apparatus of the right wing is in full sweat condition alpha crisis mode.
Oh, it is. Well, I mean, I saw it tonight on the regular news. They had Brokaw in talking to Brian Williams. Oh yeah, it's a good thing. It doesn't have any collusions into it, but you know. It's like, God. So like I say, it's starting at the top, working their way down. So, but
I know.
It's going to be a couple weeks till it gets here, but when it gets here, I'll happily go watch it.
But, well, I'd like to see it. I don't know. I don't know if it'll come here where I am. I don't know if it's allowed.
You can go to the website, and they've got a listing of where, when it's coming out, and when and where. On the for an inconvenient truth.
What is it? An inconvenienttruth.com?
Yeah. I think that's what it lists to. There's another one attached to it, but I can't think of the name of it. I'm sorry. But probably if you just Google the name, you know what I mean? It'll lead you to it. But they've got a...
Well, I'll go and have a look.
Well, it's like it opens this week and it gets here in a month. So...
Yeah.
So you know how that goes. But that's just the way life is on that. But also to let you know, in case y'all want to start looking at it, there is apparently a companion book that is supposed to be on sale, I think, as about now, just supposed to match the opening day about it. So I have my earth in the balance, so I'll go pick up my inconvenient truth. So,
they've got to be scared of something, Luke, in order to get them this jacked up. There's got to be some truth involved with it.
Well, you know, it's like say that's why I think on our side, like say they're gonna be slapping at Gore before they think he can even get started. And on the right side, I'm just waiting to see when the right wingers. It's going to be a fight to see who they decide to go with. If they think McCain can win, or if I think the other option is they're going to go behind George Allen, who I think is going to size up to be your main opposition to him.
Well, that's a distinct possibility.
So that could be interesting, having right wingers versus right wingers. This could be fun.
Yeah, just see who can sleaze on the other.
Come on, this could be fun.
No holds barred, right-wing chainsaw death match. No one admitted after the first 5 minutes. I know. Hey, Luke, thanks a lot, brother.
All right, you have a good evening, Bob.
You too. Bye now. Bye. All right, we're coming up on our first bottom of the hour break. When we come back, we're going to get into, that's right, prayer meeting edition. Everybody, Hymnals up. Present. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website over at progressive.org. We don't hear enough about Medicaid and how Bush is strangling it and stripping the poor and stripping the disabled of the care they need. It's the Bush shell game. While everyone's eyes were on Social Security and Medicare, he was slashing away at Medicaid, which is funded both by the states and by the feds. But the states are in a budget crunch, and Bush, he doesn't believe in government programs that help people. He only believes in government programs that help corporations or that kill people overseas. So he's proposed huge cuts in federal funding for Medicaid, and beyond that, he's letting the states do his dirty work for him. He and the Republicans in Congress pushed through a law late last year that now allows states a ridiculous amount of flexibility in implementing Medicaid. They can now charge higher copays and premiums, and they can even limit coverage, which they're already doing. Kentucky, for instance, is scrimping on drug coverage and drastically curtailing speech and physical therapy. A Great Society program, Medicaid was a promise to the poor and to the disabled that at least their medical needs would be taken care of. Now, 40 years later, Bush and state governments are breaking that promise. So much for the Great Society. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
Told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. And we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Edition of Head On this Wednesday late afternoon here in the last little toe hills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama. My lovely wife Agnes behind the controls in our secure undisclosed location in the heart of the hills and hollers of West Virginia. We've pretty much got the southern Appalachians covered this way, don't we? Darn right. Okay, first prayer meeting story. You know who Richard Pombo is, right? He's the representative for California's 11th congressional district, and he had a fundraiser. Had a fundraiser a couple of days ago, and Vice President, the big time Dick Cheney, showed up. Now that goes to tell you what kind of an insane bastard Richard Pombo is, that, you know, Cheney will show up for him. This guy's in big trouble. He's even got, well, he's kind of like the Joe Lieberman sort of situation. He's got primary opposition. I guess the California primary is, what, June 6th? And Pombo is being challenged by a former Republican member of Congress, Paul Pete McCloskey, one of those Republicans referred to as moderate. That means they talk like they care about people's rights until it comes to voting against them, and then they do. Now, this guy actually opposed the Vietnam War, McCloskey did, and he also co-authored the Endangered Species Act. And he moved from his home in Yolo County into Pombo's 11th congressional district just so he could run against this sleazebag Pombo. Pombo, among other things, is one of these people who believes that, you know, the EPA is a Nazi organization. No kidding. I mean, is that weird? He's been trying to rewrite the Endangered Species Act. Yeesh. And I want to share this with you because, you know, it was $500 a head to get into this thing. It was $2,100 if you wanted a photo op with the bionic vice president. And the thing netted more than $200,000. That's in addition to the $1 million Pombo already has for his reelection bid. Now, of course, it was a Republican affair, so they had to have some Pharisee or Sadducee or, a religious hypocrite of the right-wing religion industry, fake Christian variety. This guy, Reverend Brent Randall Regnert. Stop it, I said Regnert. Brent Randall Regnert. Now, the Reverend Brent Randall Regnert, he is children's pastor, wow, of Christian Life Center in Stockton, California. All right? Children's pastor of Christian Life Center in Stockton, California. He did the invocation. You want to hear how the prayer started? Have you already seen this? This is how Reverend Regnert, children's pastor of the Christian Life Center in Stockton, California, this is how his invocation began. And I quote, "Lord, tonight is all about..." Come on, he's a minister. Worshiping you, honoring you, thanking you for the graces you have bestowed upon us. "Lord, tonight is all about raising money." No kidding. No kidding. "Lord, tonight is all about raising money." And raise it they did, to the tune of 200 large. There's your, you know, there's your dedication to what did Yeshua the Palestinian carpenter say? Sell everything and follow me. Not the Reverend Regnert, not Richard Pombo, not Dick Pombo. Oh no. "Lord, tonight is all about raising money." I don't know. Maybe he's the most honest pastor I've ever heard. Because for most of them, you know, if you gave him the sodium pentothal, you'd find out, "Lord, it's all about raising money." But this one just came out and said it. Whew. And this guy's a children's pastor? What are the children's sermons at the Christian Life Center? What are they like? Suffer the little children to come unto me and bring me faith gifts, and hustle my prayer hankies to the unsuspecting heathen hordes. Go on out, kids. Don't come back till you got at least a grand. Well, you know, these are the people that have the family values, right? Sure. Lord, tonight is all about raising money. I don't even do that. Wow. Let's go to the phones. Robert is calling in from Japan. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program. You're head on.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Very good. Sitting down for a nice Thursday morning, drinking my green tea, and, of course, enjoying you as I always do.
No, that sounds like a great way to get the day started.
Yes, of course.
At least the green tea part.
A little bit about religion, because I think last week, what was his name, Jim, got bent out of shape about some of your comments.
Yeah, kind of. I think he wishes I would be a little bit nicer to the religion industry, but I don't have it in me.
Well. Now, let me give you some background about who I am. Okay, now, I'm kind of a religious liberal. I'm going to be ordained as a deacon this year in the Anglican Episcopal Church. And I think your comments are pretty much on target. I mean, I like the dialogue that you're setting up, and I wish more of it. And the reason I say that is because, you know, from my experience in the church, I see it as has been a lazy, decrepit organization that needs to be poked and prodded and poked and prodded to see if it will ever come alive. And we need more of this dialogue and discussion. So, I'm being in the church. I am its foremost critic, because I have seen and experienced enough that there's no way that I could not be a critic. But
well, we've had something on the order of 1,500 years of taking everything at face value, Robert.
Oh, right, exactly, right.
And
not only that, but the Catholic Church stifling any kind of criticism and discussion.
Right.
You know, I mean, the Catholic Church now has a list of books that its members should not read, must not read, you know, because they don't want them to think. But you know, so but anyway, I see what you're doing is very much important, and I think it's something that the American Church needs more than everything else. But, you know, I've kicked around the world a bit. I mean, I've been to 13 countries, and I've seen the Christian church in Israel, and I've seen, the Syrian church, the Greek Orthodox church, all kinds of churches. And I see the variety and the richness of these different churches. And I also see how impoverished the American church is in terms of insularity, its arrogance, its bigotry. And I just couldn't be a member in the American church. I would not be active. I wasn't active because I got too sick and tired of them wanting money to repave the parking lot or to have a new toaster oven or this or that. So I passed on it there.
Well, Robert, like I've said before, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist.
Mm.
And, I'm down here in my hometown now. I haven't been down here for several years. And lo and behold, I drove past my home church, and they have raised up a red brick Taj Mahal. Honest to God, they have.
Yeah,
and it's disgusting to me.
Well, when was the last time you ever saw a Baptist church run a homeless shelter or a soup kitchen?
Not lately.
Not lately. And this is the Baptist church was the only church that came out for the Iraqi war. It was the one that.
Mm-hmm.
So, having been over here in Japan, this is a hyper materialistic country. And sooner or later, I mean, if you got a brain, you get tired of the hyper-materialism, because once you take God out of the system, the people are left with two things. Their company, they live for their company, and they also live for the shopping mall. And they go through lives in which all they do is just to work for things and buy things, and that's it. In fact,
but that's not even in accordance with the native Buddhism or Shintoism, is it?
No, of course. But, you know, that kind of went to the wayside, too. I mean, you know, once the Industrial Revolution got started and really kicked up in the Meiji era, even the Buddhism and the Shintoism kind of went by the wayside, except for the holidays, you know. So, you know, it's like in Israel. I mean, you think the Jews in Israel are religious? I lived there for almost a year, and they're not.
That's a more secular. That's a more secular state than what we have here.
Oh yes, very much so. Very much so. I mean, you get this little knot of religious Orthodox people that somehow has maintained a lot of control over the country. But you know, the Jews are not religious by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, you mentioned, Robert, having been in several countries. The American Family Association is intimately tied up with the Reverend James Dobson. It's his little press organ, and I never cease to be amazed at some of the stuff that I get when I go looking at their headlines and so forth. I went there today. I don't have the web address right off the top of my head, but. I went there today, Robert. This is the lead headline. Ministry nurtures Christian leadership on, and you know, I was taken aback. Ministry nurtures Christian leadership on dark continent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Dark continent? That went out with Rudyard Kipling, didn't it?
Right. In fact, I mean, the African Anglicans were, I guess, more upset about what was going on in the Anglican Church than any other country, you know, about the Anglican Church anointing a gay bishop, if you remember that big hubalab.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, it's just, I mean, I look at the American Church and I look at America as just, you know, almost a very sad state. In fact, if Christ came back today, I think he would take a look at the church and give a big hoo-ha yawn and keep on going. You know, I just don't see him. I don't see the church doing anything. Let me tell you a couple stories about why I see why I have my attitude that I have.
Okay.
Three months ago, maybe last winter, there was a homeless man right outside the church, right? And after I had given my sermon, I said, I'm going to bring this bowl of noodles out to the homeless man and feed him. And the word got back from the Japanese congregation, because we have an English congregation full of Japanese and some Japanese. And they said, don't do that. Don't bring that bowl. And I said, why? And the word came back, if you bring the bowl of noodles out to him, more people will come. And I said, well, good. I mean, then they'll associate the church with some, you know, charity and love and everything else. And they said, don't do it. And I went out and did it anyway. And then I asked the priest, I said, look, one bowl of noodles is not going to keep him alive. He needs to be fed every single day. So I'm going to pay, you know, $200 a month, and you just go out and buy the bentos, the lunch boxes for him, and because the store is right across the street, the convenience store, and go feed him. And the priest said, no, I can't do that. I asked his son. He said the son refused. And so, you know, that, I mean, that's where it was. But, you know, I could have run away from that, Bob. I could have said, well, these
sure.
people aren't worth the dust on my shoes. But frankly, I stood in there because the world is too filled with runners. I mean, people running away from unions, people running away from NGOs, people running away from progressive parties because they don't like this, they don't like that, and they don't like this. And there's runners and there's reformers. And we need more damn reformers in this world than we need runners, because conservatives are the runners. They're the whiners, the complainers, and they don't have the backbone to stick it out. And so I'm going to stick it out a little bit, you know, more and see if I can reform the church, because it's dying. We have 800 members for the entire country of Japan. We're losing 80 members a year. So in 10 years, we're going to be gone. They closed one church already over in Moji Ward. And we're losing members because of this apathy, which I consider is the biggest sin of the world, because it allows all manners of evil to go unabated,
and flourish.
Laziness. So, and then I wrote a sermon the following Sunday. I said basically a snippet. Non-Christians are looking at you and judging the church by your actions, by your inactions, by your words, and by what you do not say. Non-Christians are also judging you how you show your convictions and how passionately you believe in your beliefs and your faith. You might think that when you leave this building, you're leaving the church behind, but no, that is not the case. Where is the church? It is, as I've said, in the smile that you give on the stranger on the street. It is the time that you take out and the money to buy food to give to that homeless person in the street, and the time and the effort to learn his name, to give him back the dignity he's lost. Where is the church? It's found in the reading, the application, the message, making that passage come alive in the heart of others. And basically, where is the church? It's in your connections. And so, you know, that's where the church is. And basically, Bob, I see you more of a Christian than that priest there, because you're doing the work of God. You're the one that's inspiring people and doing more than the priest has done. And so you can dress people up and call them priest. You can call them father. You can call them pope, and it's meaningless, because if you go through the illustrated The Illustrated History of the Church by Little, you will go through the history of Christianity, and you will be just disgusted. A pope against Americanism, a pope against unions, popes against any progressive action. And in God's eye, I don't think God gives a flip about what your title is or what you do. It's about the work you do here on earth and whether you're bringing about progress. So,
well, Robert, thank you very kindly. That humbles me, what you said. You talk about the man and the flack that you got there. I can't imagine a situation where anybody can look at that and not, you know, either walk away from the teachings of Yeshua, or else take the guy some food, because isn't it part and parcel? You know, I was hungry and you gave it, and you gave me food. You know, that, and if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me.
Exactly right. Exactly.
And how can you not look at that and not just hear the words in your head?
Exactly right. And it never ceases to amaze me. You know, this is where I have to stand as a reformer and start saving it, because otherwise all we're going to be left with is just damn companies and shopping malls here in Japan. And
well, this is corporate, and it's not just there, of course. I mean, you've already referenced the church in the United States, and I don't know how it is in other countries, but this is the corporatizing of faith. And I'm rough on the idea of faith, because or not rough on it, but I just demand that it be acknowledged for what it is. It's, you know, it's not intellect. It's something you do with your spirit. It's something you do with your heart, if you will. And we've got the death of faith. This great big pile of bricks that I referenced a few minutes ago, Robert. They got a bowling alley.
Right, right. Well, you know,
I mean, talk about your holy rollers.
Just to sort of sum up, I mean, I send my kids to a Buddhist kindergarten. I've had lots of interactions with Buddhists here, and it's kind of opened up a new world. I went to one temple, which I call the Temple of Answers. The predecessor, the prime minister, would call up the priestess to get answers and information and guidance. And I had a sister of mine that died, and she was very, very much a good person. I mean, homeschooled children were models, vegetarian, but she was atheist. And then I have a younger sister that's Christian, you know, goes to the Catholic Church, but very materialistic, and children are completely out of control. So when my sister died, I kind of went to the temple to find out exactly where she was. Now, in Buddhist philosophy, there's seven levels of enlightenment. And it's not this issue of saved, unsaved. It's just, you know, where do you stand in terms of getting, you know, and being enlightened and being more loving? And basically, you know, the priestess, you know, after praying to the Buddhist statue, the Judo-san, she said she's on the first level. So, but she said it's okay. But there is also a hell. And one of the reasons I'm going to go back on June 4th to find out basically where Ronald Reagan is, what hell he's in. Because belief is important. I need to make sure that these people, you know, like Reagan and Bush and all these people, there's a hell for them.
You know, I feel like that's so contrary to everything that I was taught, that there are, I've got a list of people, Robert, that I really have to believe in hell for.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I was reflecting as I was driving along today on, you know, the difference between people who have to have a hell in order to be compelled to be good, which is no goodness at all.
Right.
And the people for whom hell is not real and choose to do evil.
Right.
And then there's that little handful of people who do not live in contemplation of either one and choose to try to live a good life along the lines of the teaching of the Buddha or Yeshua or any of the great spiritual masters that have trod this planet.
Right.
And it seems to me, Robert, that like I said, that last group is a very small handful.
Well, I mean, it's basically being more philosophical about where you how loving you are and what you're doing and moving up on the levels of enlightenment. Basically, it's not an issue of being saved or unsaved because I don't think that cuts it. I mean, this priest, I don't know where he stands, but I'm not overwhelmed by what he's done. But I'll let you go and let some more people talk. But there's just pretty much.
Well, I wish you the very best of mornings. I tell you, that sounds so nice just to sit down with a cup of green tea on it. I trust it's a summer or late spring is there and you've got some decent weather going on.
Oh, very good weather. Yes, very good weather. But just wanted to say that you're doing more for the Christian Church than a lot of these a lot of the priests and popes are. So. Because, the church needs some criticism. It needs to be poked and prodded and poked and prodded again and again so that the people wake up and do something. So.
Well, I do appreciate that, and I thank you very kindly, and I wish you the very best of days, Robert.
Okay, you too. You take care now.
All right, hope we'll hear from you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. It's worth thinking about these things. Like I said, I can't countenance a church with a bowling alley. Because you gotta, I understand the thinking behind the bowling alley is that, we're gonna give the young people somewhere to come and socialize and fellowship and have fellowship. And, that way we will keep them out of the crack dens and the meth motels. This is the lily whitest, most upwardly mobile, wealthy, Southern Baptist Church that I could imagine. They don't need a bowling alley. They need a soup kitchen. Oh, what's the Hebrew word for a blessing? Is that mitzvah? I can't remember. The bowling alley is not a blessing. A bowl of soup is a blessing. But try telling that to the steering committee, huh? Let's take our top of the hour break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. House leaders of both parties stood in rare election year unanimity Wednesday demanding that the FBI surrender documents it took and then remove agents involved in the weekend raid of a congressman's office. House Speaker Dennis Hastert and Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said in a statement that the Justice Department must immediately return the papers it unconstitutionally seized. The leaders said that the congressman, William Jefferson, a Louisiana Democrat, should then cooperate with the investigation. Both parties have protested the Saturday night search of Jefferson's office on Capitol Hill, which they said violated the Constitution's separation of powers doctrine. FBI agents searched Jefferson's office in pursuit of evidence in a bribery investigation. The search warrant, signed by U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan, was based on an affidavit that said agents found $90,000 in cash stashed in the freezer of Jefferson's home. Under intense bipartisan fire from Capitol Hill, Veterans Affairs Secretary Jim Nicholson said Wednesday he was outraged by his agency's decision to keep the theft of veterans' personal data quiet for 2 weeks. Nicholson said, quote, "I will not tolerate inaction and poor judgment when it comes to protecting our veterans," end quote. He said that he asked the department's inspector general to expedite an investigation to determine who was responsible for the time delay in revealing the burglary. "You're doing a heck of a job, Nikki." The White House press secretary, Tony Snow, said Bush had, quote, "full faith and confidence," unquote, in Nicholson. Snow originally had declined to issue a statement of support in the president's name, but then said he wanted to clarify his remarks. As concerns build over increased tensions between the United States and Iran, some Democrats in Congress are beginning to mount opposition to a preemptive nuclear strike, according to a RawStory.com report. Members of the House Democrats' Progressive Caucus are holding unofficial hearings and gathering signatures for a letter to President Bush in hopes, they say, of attenuating the risk of nuclear confrontation. Responding to reports that phone companies are turning over records related to Americans' telephone calls to the National Security Agency, the American Civil Liberties Union today launched a 20-state Don't Spy on Me campaign to end government surveillance programs they claim are illegal. ACLU affiliates in 20 states today filed complaints with public utility commissions or sent letters to state attorneys general and other officials demanding investigations into whether local telecommunications companies allowed the NSA to spy on their customers. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights brings you this word of caution about the side effects of psychiatric drugs on children. Glenn McIntosh's daughter reacted adversely to a drug she was given for depression.
Her personality changed, her behavior changed, and it became a downward spiral where she would start feeling urges to throw herself out a window.
Get the facts. Report psychiatric abuse. Visit www.cchr.org today. That's www.cchr.org.
A campaign by gun rights activists to make it easier to use deadly force in self-defense is rapidly winning support across the country as state after state makes it legal for people who feel their lives are in danger to shoot down an attacker, whether in a carjacking or just on the street. The law has spurred debate about whether it protects against lawlessness or spurs more crime. Supporters say it's an unambiguous answer to random violence, while critics, including police chiefs and prosecutors, warn that criminals are more likely to benefit than innocent victims. The Senate voted overwhelmingly Wednesday to limit debate on election year immigration legislation, clearing the way for final passage later this week of a bill that calls for tougher border security as well as eventual chance at citizenship for millions of men and women in the country undocumented. The vote to advance that measure was 73-25, 13 more than the 60 needed. Despite the controversy surrounding the bill, the outcome was not a surprise. Even some of the bill's opponents said they were satisfied they had been given ample opportunity over the past week to try and give the bill a more conservative cast. Fighting in rugged southern Afghan mountains killed at least 24 militants and 5 Afghan forces, while the U.S. military acknowledged Wednesday that the Taliban have grown in strength and influence in recent weeks. The violence came after a week of some of the most deadliest violence since the Taliban regime's ouster in 2001. As many as 336 people have died, mostly militants, according to Afghan and coalition figures. The tiny Gulf state of Qatar, famed mainly for the Arab, having the Arab world's largest reserves of natural gas, added another record to its fame Tuesday, one of the world's most expensive telephone numbers. The winning bid was $2.75 million. The winner, who made the highest bid 10 minutes into the auction, declined a request for interviews. Eight people took part in the auction, organized by Qatar Telecom, to help raise funds for charity, paying 3,000 Qatari rials, or $824, per ticket. The number? 666-6666. This has been News from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head-On with Bob Kincaid.
You most assuredly are. And you are welcome to bring anything to the table that you would like. We call this our Wednesday night prayer meeting edition because in the tradition in which I was raised, namely the Southern Baptist tradition, we go to prayer meeting on Wednesday night. And, you know, I mean, so we use this opportunity to, as Robert noted, poke a stick at some things that need some sticks poked at it. But I hate to keep people waiting on the phone. Jim has been with us for quite some time waiting, and Jim, you're head on.
I am.
There you are.
Head on for what? Well, listen.
Head on for the. You're head on for the truth.
Okay. I'll tell you what I'm going to bring to the table tonight. I'm going to bring a bowl of winter kimchi. How's that?
I tell you what, I love kimchi.
You would.
In fact, we've got.
You would.
We've got a listener in Korea who has promised me a killer kimchi recipe.
Well, if I hear about wallpaper peeling and unaccounted for pet death, I'll know what the reason. I'll know where to look.
Yeah, we're gonna bury it way off in the backyard, Jim.
Oh Lord, good God! It sounds like the. I was just joking when I said that. My God, this guy used to open a jar of that stuff, and I said, "My God, did the whole Russian army come through here and take a dump?"
It's evil.
Have you ever seen how they make that stuff? They throw bats and owls and stuff into it. It's awful.
No, I don't think that's the recipe I'm getting, Jim.
I'm talking about what's over in Korea.
I'm getting the one with the Napa cabbage and the hot peppers and the carrots and the onions and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, may the good Lord bless and keep you and hold you in the palm and hold your nose in the palm of his hand.
Well, I will tell you a little secret, Jim. Yeah. Kimchi is an awesome, awesome, awesome hangover remedy.
Yeah. I'll just say this. Kimchi itself is awesome, awesome, awesome. But moving on to what I wanted to say was, your last caller said that Christ would be pretty upset if he came back or might ho-hum or whatever, if he would come back and see the condition of churches today,
mm-hmm.
he would probably do a little more than just ho-hum. I think he would probably be very, very unhappy and, you know, very, very unsettled about it to the point of making or taking some very stern corrective action. And I'll just say no more about that. I think that's what his reaction would be, and I don't think he's very happy with it. You know, Bob, I don't pretend to know the ways of God to man and how, sometimes I used to think and still do, alcohol can do more than Milton can to justify the ways of God to man. I don't know. All I can do is just believe as I believe. And as I've told you before, any type of faith is a leap into the unknown. And that's basically it. And it's up to each person. But when I do view the way that some of these churches are twisting the truth and taking Christian dogma and taking love thy neighbor as thyself into the doctrine that greed is good, it makes me very unhappy, extremely. It really does, because that's not what it's all about. It never has been, it never will be, and this pastor who came on and said, well, you know, where's the money? Well, you got to, as you said, you got to give him credit. At least he was honest.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, and I can just imagine what type of influence he must have on these young people.
The children's pastor. I know.
Yeah, just, I mean, I can't see anything wrong with kids going bowling and stuff like that, but I think it's good for them to know that there are other people who are much more unfortunate than they, who don't have Adidas or Nike shoes and all the latest styles and cell phones and a car and things like this. I mean, you know, these people are promoting the raising of a generation of vipers, in my opinion, really. In which they,
well, they
the doctrine that greed is good, like Gordon Gekko in that movie. You were saying something.
Oh,
sorry.
No. I remember it well. The thing is, I mean, I remember. I don't know what it is with these youth ministers or children's pastors or whatever. Maybe it's because they're a little bit younger and they've still got some oats left to feel, among other things. But during the 2004 campaign, I think it was, or maybe 2000, one of these youth ministers from an Assemblies of God church in Iowa was brought up on stage with Dear Leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he got busted, 2.5 years ago. I remember covering the story back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio. He got busted for having an affair with one of his 15-year-old parishioners.
Oh, well, that just won't do. And yet he was able to escape from that, and then, of course, statutory rape, essentially, I guess that's what that is, right?
Yeah.
And then come above and appear on the same stage as the president.
Well, no, he was only caught afterward. It was after his appearance with the president.
After he made his debut with Gorgeous George.
Yeah, talk about an auto de fe.
Well, did they actually bring him into the town square and light him up or what?
He was charged and being prosecuted. Last I heard, that's the problem with so many of these things. You hear about, you know, you hear the initial story and then it all goes away. It was more than a year ago. About a year ago, I was calling around to Jackson County, Alabama, to find out about another youth minister who had been a youth minister in around Scottsboro, Alabama, for about 20 years, and it turned out he'd been suffering the little children to come unto him in ways that don't bear repeating.
I understand. A lot of that's been going on, particularly in other churches as well, and it does not please me at all. Let me tell you, it's just very disappointing.
Well, I think we have a right. Duty to openly oppose it, don't we, Jim?
Well, of course. I mean, you know, there needs obviously a church of this type not needs reformation, to say the very least. It needs reformation and it needs to be purified. And you know, these people are workers of horrible iniquities that will cause all types of psychological scars on young people and you know, just cause other people who are older to completely lose faith in whatever, you know, what faith they have left. Well, the way I see it, I mean, I think it's terrible. And this religion industry, in which the only thing they're interested in is the salvation of dollar bills instead of souls, I mean, you know, I mean, we saw this back in the Middle Ages when John Tetzel used to preach the sermons for indulgences, but at least mm-hmm. he was using the money to build a beautiful church, and at least that was something that was tangible we can see and have a result of.
Well, and back then,
you know,
Jim, when you lived half your life in the mud, you needed to come into somewhere that looked halfway nice that would uplift your spirits. I understand some of that.
Yeah, and, you know, St. Peter's Basilica is basically the result of the sale of those indulgences, so, I mean, you know, I'm not defending that either because, I mean, that was a rather callous way, but it was a way the Pope raised money. But, God, these people have taken what he did and compared to them, I think whichever Pope, I'm not sure which Pope was responsible for this. I mean, you know, he's nothing compared to these guys. I mean, these guys are huge, big-time corporate swindlers, in my opinion, tell you the truth.
Well, I mean, Pat Robertson's down to the point where, I mean, Luke wasn't kidding. Pat Robertson is down to the point where he is selling the nutritional muscle supplements.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, whatever Pat Robertson wants to say is fine. I mean, the more that idiot says, the more he hurts his own cause. You know, that's one reason.
But Jim,
I don't get upset when Pat Robertson opens his mouth and says stuff about the leader of Venezuela and stuff like that. Because, you know, that's just going to come back and bite him right in the ass. It really will. And when he says it, it's almost like he's on our side. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do see it. I do see, Jim. But the problem is, for every wacky thing, and maybe it's just because you don't move in these kind of circles, for every wacky thing that Pat Robertson says, there are literally several million people in this nation who call themselves Americans who say, you know, he's right.
No,
I
don't move in those kind of circles. No, I don't. No, nor have I ever. No. And I'm not,
elitist,
but I don't.
Well, I generally don't, but I have this knack for running across them.
If people are that stupid, then I don't know what to say. But stupidity.
I ran into a car salesman up in West Virginia who told me we needed to tear down the NASA program because them scientists is just trying to disprove God.
Oh, no, that's not true. That's not true.
Yes, it happened, Jim. As God is my witness, it happened.
Oh, I believe you, but, I mean, that's just crazy. By the way, speaking of another subject here, jumping, I saw Al Gore on the Today Show, and I mentioned it last night before my one-liner, which nobody could understand.
I did.
well, I mean, you know, I thought it was pretty good. I mean, this woman said she was celibate and said she couldn't tell, she gave away. But anyway, I mean,
I still like it.
I thought it was real good. I mean, you know, she was like one of these large black women, and she was just full of herself, a stand-up comic, and it was just so much sounded so much better coming from her lips than it did from mine. But nonetheless, it provided great morale support for this listener. But Mr. Gore this morning on the Today Show acquitted himself quite well, and basically, you know, he showed some interesting pictures of different parts of the world, like Mount Fujiyama. I mean, no longer is it capped with snow. I mean, it's practically bare.
Mount Kilimanjaro is the same way.
And, you know, it's just a matter of the fact that he said that these big companies are paying scientists to say, oh, there's no such thing. This is periodic burps and stuff of the earth, and it periodically heats up, and there's no such thing as far as the greenhouse effect. You know, he said this morning that they're paying off these scientists are being paid by these large corporations just the way the tobacco companies are paying people off to say, you know, to minimize the risk of that or to try to put a better face on their image, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to fool a lot of people into thinking that, you know, there's no such thing as global warming and this, that, and the other. And, you know, Gore just was relaxed and just a totally different human being. And when asked if he would run again, I don't think he really made a commitment one way or the other, but he did say that he was happy doing something. He said after running for four elective offices, he was finally happy doing something in his life that he felt made a real difference. And that's what he said.
Well, you know, that may be the mark, Jim, of an enlightened man. I caught a little bit of an interview between Wolf Blitzer and Jimmy Carter today.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't, and it was a little bit that was similar to that because I couldn't help remarking to myself on how relaxed and how composed and how wise and utterly in his element Jimmy Carter seemed to be. I've just about reached the point where I think that, you know, if you could build that time machine and go 100 years into the future, Jim, you would find history books talking about Jimmy Carter and referring to him as the American Aurelius.
I think Jimmy Carter is a man who has found inner peace, and he has made his peace with God as well as with his fellow man. And I tell you the truth, when he was president, he was too high-minded and too good of a person to sit behind that desk and do some of the dirty stuff that was required of him to do. And when he tried to tell the American people how he felt in his heart, a lot of them made fun of him. and they thought that he was just a crank and he was just crazy and stuff like that. But, you know, let's look at who's laughing now. Jimmy Carter is the one who's gone beyond his presidency with Habitat and things of that nature and the Carter Center to try to make this world a better place. And when he leaves this world, he will have left it a much better place than when he found it, which is a hell of a lot more than I can say for the current tenant of the White House today. That's for damn sure.
Or any of his family.
Yeah, really. Or any of his family. I mean, you know, honest to God, I mean, Jimmy Carter, and we've had some good men who've led us and who have ruled wisely under that house, and we've had some real bad ones, and unfortunately we have one right there who is just incredible. And my last thing is, this congressman whose office was violated by the FBI. Now, I don't know what this guy was doing. Apparently, he was taking money on the side, right?
From an undercover FBI agent who allegedly gave him $100,000 to bribe Nigerian officials.
And this was a sting operation?
Mm-hmm.
So was he involved in other things than this? Is this his only offense? Do you know?
I think this is his only offense, although he has had a bit of a reputation for being, you know, the classic New Orleans politician, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. A little hush money can do a lot of talking.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I remember Abscam. Remember that?
Very much so.
Who was it they nailed with that caper when they had the guy? Was it Jenrette?
Rita Jenrette?
Was it John Jenrette?
It might have been John Jenrette.
In his blood. And his wife wrote that book, My Capital Secrets, in which he described where he took her right there on the Capitol steps beneath the portico. That was.
Now you're. Yeah, I think so. I think
well,
so.
He's a good old South Carolina boy. I used to see Big Bad John when I lived in South Carolina. He was a character, let me tell you. But, I mean, just his. I mean, he was so crooked he used the corkscrew for a ruler. But I mean, I mean, honest to God, really. But I mean,
well, you know, yeah, my feeling.
I would like to see that if they're gonna be busting this Democratic congressman, then let them go into some of these Republican congressmen's offices at night and see what's going on. If this is what they're gonna do, because apparently, Bob, it looks to me like the law is just whatever they want it to be. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and that's. On the one hand, I think Jefferson should step down from his committee, his ranking position on whatever committee it is that he's on, and he should wait for the thing to shake out. That's what we demanded of Tom DeLay.
Right, exactly.
And I have no stomach for double standards. Now, by the same token, however, there's nothing this business of sending the FBI into his office in the dark. And still of the night is nothing if not jackbooted and heavy-handed.
Well, I mean, I can see no difference between that and the plumbers who went into the Watergate office. You know, when you start going into the dark of night and they don't, I mean, did they have a warrant? Did they have any type of legal instrument that entitled them to do that?
I've read several accounts of it, Jim, and I have not seen a single mention of a warrant.
Well, I think when you start going into someone's office or someone's property, don't you have to have some type of legal document that entitles you to do so? Or aren't you basically just pulling a stormtrooper-type operation?
That's my understanding. Now, of course, what's interesting is in this press conference that was held, J. Dennis Hastert and Nancy Pelosi, they didn't gripe about it on Fourth Amendment grounds. They griped about it on separation of powers grounds.
Well, I wonder who authorized the FBI to do that, because, I mean, these guys don't take a dump without a plan. You know that, and I know that.
It's just like torture at Abu Ghraib, Jim. All of this stuff comes down from the top.
Well, I wonder who signed the paper. Somebody had to sign something, because I know they're not going to do something like that. They've got some type of get-out-of-jail-free card on paper that somebody authorized them to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Well, this is, again, and I hate to beat on this and beat it to death, Jim. This is the activity of a unitary executive. This is what they mean by unitary executive.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, basically, you don't have any rules. Laws melt like ice cream before these people. And they have no respect for the rule of law. And the only rule of law they know is what I call the Fuhrer principle. And that is what the unitary executive is, in fact. I mean, it has gone before us in history in Germany. That's exactly what Hitler pulled when he, you know, became the Fuhrer, and they had what they called the Fuhrer principle. It was a unitary executive, was it not?
That's the way I understand it, especially after, what was it called, the Enabling Act?
Well, the Enabling Act became combined his offices of chancellor with that of the president, or minister-president, after von Hindenburg died in August of 34, and 2 + 2 equaled Fuhrer, or 1 + 1 = 2, which was Fuhrer. That's how the Enabling Act worked. And then, of course, the Reichstag rubber-stamped it and gave him dictatorial powers to meet clear and present dangers that were being posed by things like the communists burning the Reichstag and other types of things that they would drum up. And it was just, that's, but I mean, the unitary presidency and the Fuhrer principle are just first cousins as far as I'm concerned. Now, maybe I'm wrong there. I don't know. But
no, I don't think you are, because they have to make up the unitary executive out of whole cloth. You know, the whole unitary executive thing stems from the simple phrase that, and he shall, in the Constitution, and he shall be commander of the armed forces in time of war.
Right.
And they've made everything up out of that. As long as he can say he's at war, you know, but anybody in their right mind would look at it and say, well, you know, the Constitution delegates to the legislative branch the ability to declare war, so he can't be commander-in-chief unless the legislative branch has first done its duty.
Well, Bob, I'll tell
you. But that's apparently too complicated.
The only thing that we need to do now to really make it the legitimate article or the legitimate reproduction is when all civil servants and soldiers take the oath of office. They'll use George Bush's name just like they use Adolf Hitler's and what they call the Fahrenheit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, a loyalty oath to an individual.
And that's what they did in Germany. That's when you see all these old newsreel photographs of banners being lowered and oaths being sworn in the military and in the civil service, that they were no longer paying attention to the Constitution, but to the personality and the dogma of one man. And that is what scares the hell out of me.
And it should. You know, I think if the Congress is serious about this, they ought to turn around and order, and I guess the Speaker could do this, Hastert should order the Capitol Police to go and bust into the Oval Office and snoop around a little bit. It's the same thing.
Well, you would have a gunfight around that place that would make Noriega's place look like an Easter pageant if they did that. But, I mean, if they don't do it soon, if something isn't done soon to restrain the executive branch, then we are headed for some very perilous times. And I mean, we're well on the way. And I say that with the utmost seriousness, and I can't even find any joke to make about that. And on that note, I'm going to let you go and let somebody else have this microphone. But I appreciate the time that you've afforded me tonight. And
no, no trouble at all. I always enjoy it, Jim.
And
have a great evening.
I'm just very frightened for my own country. And I would like to say I am not any rabble-rouser. I don't want to cause any type of revolution in this country, because, Bob, I've seen too many revolutions produce things which are worse than what they were supposed to alleviate. You know what I'm saying?
No, I do. I do.
I mean, you
know, and inevitably the poor people take it on the nose.
I mean, I don't want to see any reign of terror occur in this country that, like, happened after the French Revolution. And I don't want to see any Bolshevik revolution or communist dictatorship replace what the Tsar had before, because it was worse than Tsardom. It really was, as far as what it did to the people. But I just want to see this country at least emerge, as Churchill once said, into the broad sunlit uplands of a bigger and better and brighter future for our children and everybody. Those are my desires as a human being and as an American, as someone who loves this country dearly.
Well, I think it's an admirable sentiment, Jim, and I thank you for it.
It's in my heart and my mind as well, and I thank you
all
for
right.
your time. Good night, sir.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. I like what Jim says there. And who's who was the great poet who wrote "Let America Be America"? Something like that, or America Be America Again. That's all we as liberals and progressives are after. is having a government in which we are participants and in which we can expect the de minimis standards set forth in the Constitution are adhered to. I don't see that as being so complicated. And yet you would think it was more difficult than generating fusion in a jar. And yeah, the unitary executive, it should be terrifying to anybody who contemplates what it's really about. And what you're seeing in this search of Jefferson's offices. And, you know, they don't just do things. They do things for a reason. Jefferson appears to have engaged in reprehensible conduct, so...
as I sing Joni the Jehovah Witness stripper. She drives a new car, wears expensive blouses. She tells her mama she's cleaning houses. She goes out witnessing, doing the Lord's work all week. But on the weekend, she's making ends meet. Joni, the Jehovah Witness stripper, put $1 in her G-string, and she'll deliver. If her daddy only knew, he'd probably kill her. Joni, the Jehovah Witness stripper. One night down at the club, her daddy walked in. He didn't recognize his daughter dancing. She wore a blonde wig.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. When a supposedly mainstream and, according to some, liberal news organ like the New York Times prints a smarmy gossip piece about Bill and Hillary Clinton, it makes you wonder who their target audience is. Since Republicans already hate them, and not many would read the Times anyway, and Democrats will just look on it as another unwarranted attack by a newspaper that failed to point out that pretty much every scandal involving the Clintons was made up out of thin air by Republicans, we can only guess why this column was printed. Since we haven't seen, and I don't expect to see, any articles dealing with infidelities by right-wingers, we can only assume that the Times and other news outlets are either afraid to print them for fear of being put in jail, or they're just out to get Democrats. But as I see it, this is a small part of a larger pattern. I believe that it's an attempt to destroy the public's confidence with our political system altogether, so that one day, and that day may be closer than we realize, we'll simply decide enough is enough, give up our charade of self-rule altogether, and hand over power to a few people and pray they know what they're doing. That's pretty much where we are anyway, we'll just be openly admitting it. You don't have to be a supporter of Bill or Hillary to think there's something wrong with the way the news is covered in this country. We all know from current experience and history just what happens when those in power aren't accountable to the people under them. I always just assumed that well-paid, well-educated journalists would understand that. I was wrong. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell. A contract deal has been reached between Northwest Airlines and baggage handlers represented by the International Association of Machinists. Nearly 700 jobs could be lost under the new proposal, But the union says originally the airline was seeking to cut 3,100 jobs. If the contract is approved by members, it could result in wage cuts of up to 11.5%, less vacation days, and reduced sick pay. The IAM is unhappy with the proposal, but sees it as the lesser of two evils. They decided to take what NWA had left on the table just hours before a bankruptcy court was able to free the airline to impose a contract on the employees. Other items in the contract include allowing the airline to outsource work at airports not considered to be on Northwest's main line, having employees pay 15% of the cost for their health insurance premium, and freezes the current pension plan. A date for the members to vote on the contract has not yet been set.
Another confrontation is shaping up in the airline industry between union workers and airlines management. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says that contract negotiations are going slowly with U.S. Airways and America West Airlines, which merged a year ago. The union says U.S. Airways is on a collision course with flight attendants who now want improvements in light of their earlier sacrifices that made the merger possible. The Flight Attendants Union says the airline is systematically violating the current labor contracts as negotiations over new ones are underway. The American Federation of Television and Radio Artists is backing a bill in Congress that allows fines 10 times bigger than currently allowed against broadcasters for indecent content. The union represents on-air hosts as well as reporters and other workers in the broadcasting industry. The union is backing a Senate version of the bill. A House version is also expected to pass. The House version allows fines against broadcast workers, while the Senate bill allows fines just against broadcasting owners. United Steelworkers Local 13702 in Michigan is holding a rally Thursday at the Detroit area Roseland Park Cemetery to call attention to a dispute with the cemetery owner. The company allegedly diverted $61 million from trust fund monies and is now pressing workers for concessions. Here's today's economic report. According to CFO Magazine, 30% of the nation's chief financial officers now accept that it's time for Congress to look at a national health care plan. Health care costs are a major economic drag, hurting profits and saddling workers with greater expenses. By 2015, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid say health care costs will equal 20% of gross national product. With health care costs averaging more than $12,000 per person, that will be devastating for the economy. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the second half of this Wednesday night, May the 24th edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. A reminder of the phone number, of course, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. I'm glad to have you along. And, you know, if you're listening and you're not, and you haven't wandered over to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, feel free to do so. Feel free to do so, because it is free and it is fun. I got something in the email here from our good friend Benedict at Large, and I'm just going to share it with you because Benedict writes very well, and it also uses an analogy that I have touched on from time to time as well. The title of this is The Addicted Corporation and the End of American Democracy. He says, Benedict does, it has been suggested by many that the Bush administration may feel that it cannot cede power at the end of its second term, that to do so would almost certainly result in huge numbers of its members being indicted for various crimes, both financial and possibly worse. While I also think that the Bush administration will not go lightly, I don't see indictments as being the problem, as that problem is quite simply solved by rigging the voting machines as well as other tried and tested efforts to disenfranchise a left-leaning electorate. No, not indictments, but money, or rather the addiction to money by the administration's sponsors. In looking thus far at this administration's policies across the board, both domestic and foreign, one can hardly be faulted for arriving at the conclusion that this is the largest and best organized heist in the history of mankind, making scandals like Savings and Loan and Enron appear as mere trite footnotes. But if that is true, couldn't that simply be continued by a new corrupt administration? Well, yes and no, Benedict writes. Yes, at some level it could, but where are you going to find another cast of characters who are even close to as good at this game as the current set? And that's where the addiction enters the equation. As anyone who has spent any time around an addict knows, addicts have an uncontrollable need for whatever they are addicted to, and that this need, left untreated, generally grows over time. Additionally, the addict shows no remorse, stealing anything and everything from anyone and everyone to support their addiction. Our current addicts here, the large multinational corporations, have become addicted to money over the course of the Bush reign, literally writing almost every law and trade treaty to their ultimate gain at the sacrifice of others. It is not as if this had not occurred during the other administrations. Rather, it is as if these corporations, having tried several dealers, have finally found their perfect dealer and will now predictably be unwilling to settle for anything less. Indeed, this will increasingly be their fear as the scheduled end of the Bush reign draws increasingly near, and this will become their motivation for seeking to extend that reign on a permanent basis. Their actual plan for accomplishing this remains to be seen, but their motivation for doing so can hardly be questioned. It is, after all, says Benedict at large, the nature of an addict. And indeed, you can explain a whole lot of addictive behavior, or a whole lot of behavior of the Bush administration, by looking to addictive behavior and substance abuse, and, well, abuses of many forms. I talked long before Dear Leader came out and made the Competitive Enterprise Institute mad by suggesting that America has an addiction to oil. I was describing America as a junkie in the summer of 2003, because that's what we are. And I don't see how it could be so hard to comprehend that. And it isn't, not for us. The question for us is how do we get other people to comprehend it? I mean, I've gotten to the point, Dad and I were out cruising around the other day, going to a doctor's appointment or some such. And there it was, you know, a Cadillac Escalade with one lady in it, and a Bush Cheney 04 sticker on it. And I looked at Dad and I said, you know, all those things come together to pretty much point up the fact that that person is probably an abject jerk. Oh, yeah, there was a Jesus fish, too. And I know we're not supposed to judge others, yada, yada, yada. You know, sometimes I judge. Or sometimes it's not judging. Sometimes it is merely taking stock of the facts that are presented to you and being a rational person, not running from the conclusion that they inevitably lead to. One person toddling around in a Cadillac Escalade. I mean, do you have any idea how big these daggum things are? Huge engines. I mean, these things get like Hummer mileage. I mean, these things get mileage like a Sherman tank got mileage. And we're coming to a point where we have to address the fact that some of this behavior. Okay, see, you know, little wing nuts, the people that hover, you know, the people who hover around the corners of the program, and that I hear from in email, but never have the nerve to call up and go head on with me. Okay, so you don't believe in global warming. You don't believe that we're doing anything negative by, to the planet by taking stuff out of the inside of the planet that has lain there dormant for literally millions and perhaps billions of years and burning it where it has never been burned before and burned in mass. Okay, you don't believe any of that has any impact. Fine. These people profess to love America so much more than you and I do. America, right or wrong, love it or leave it. Yeah, that's how they are. You know, these are the people who sent death threats to Natalie Maines when she had the temerity to say before a concert in London that she was ashamed to admit that George Bush was from her home state of Texas. And, of course, I've heard from numerous Texans who say, listen, quit saying he's a Texan. He's a daggum Connecticutite. Because they don't want to claim him either. You know, that's what we're dealing with in these right-wingers. It, and the question I ask is, if you love America as much as you claim you do, why won't you help make America better? You know, that stinking junkie, the Flush Flimball. That unrepentant criminal, Flush Flimball. To this day, every now and then, he'll do some sort of environmentalist story, and then he'll play that, what's that cretin's name, Paul Shanklin, doing an Elvis impression, singing In a Yugo to the tune of In the Ghetto. Now, that's offensive on a number of levels. One, that was a touching song from a time when we actually cared about or you know tried to lean toward caring about people who were less fortunate than us. And Elvis sang in the ghetto, and it was moving. And Paul Shanklin turned it into a parody song called In a Yugo. To make fun of a liberal guy and a liberal gal go on the other side of town, drive off in a Yugo, and they get squashed to death by a giant gas guzzler somewhere along the way. That's where the people who love America are, or say they love America. But they don't love America, they love themselves. They love not what they can do for America, but what America can do for them. They've taken John Kennedy's phrase and turned it on its daggum ear. And that's where we are. Let's take a quick break and come back when we do more of your phone calls at 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Guy James Means, straight talk, and great guests like author and reporter Greg Palast.
Do we have Greg on the phone?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good, Greg.
Greg talked about his new book, Armed Madhouse.
You'll see in the second chapter of the book about Big Oil that I was able to get the inside documents from the inside the State Department for the plans for the oil fields of Iraq, which is, you know, what it, you know, it's about the oil. And you actually, you know, if you thought they had a secret plan, I go and get it.
Greg Palast, thank you so much.
Don't miss Guy James weekday afternoons, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network. When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg dye kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. And we have we decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. And God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. And so now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the Decider. I'm the Decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and 4th Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Get right back to the phones. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good. You?
I'm doing good, man. What a great show.
Thank you.
I mean, even the breaks and the commercials and or the promos and the music and it's hard to walk away, brother. It's hard to walk away.
Well, cool. Thank you.
Well, I'm just speaking the truth. But talking about the truth. I got a bone to pick with you, man.
Yeah, what have I done now?
Well, listen, man. How many times have you and I disagreed?
A couple. Not a lot.
Yeah, but most people don't know about them. Not very damn many. But
true.
You really messed up on this football commissioner thing.
I am?
Sure you are.
You want Commissioner Jebby?
Huh? Well, listen. All W ever wanted to be was baseball commissioner. Hell, if be that, think of how better off the world would be. I mean, that's a valid point, Bob.
Yeah, damn right.
Football commissioner, who gives a damn? Let him be it, man. Just don't try to be president or governor. And, in fact, if you want to be football commissioner so bad, why don't you resign from being governor? We'll give it to you tomorrow. I mean, that's my thinking. The Steelers are still going to win their sixth Super Bowl. It don't matter who the commissioner is.
No. Because see, that's the thing, Wayne. If a Bush gets to be commissioner of any professional sport, all officials.
Team?
Well, no, all officials will be replaced by Diebold machines.
Steelers could still beat them, buddy. I don't give a damn, man or beast. The Steelers are going to be number one. But I'm telling you, just think about what I said,
Okay. All right.
I'm agreeing with you, But listen, I'm involved in a recount.
Yeah.
Not me, I mean, I'm not the candidate, but I'm fighting for him. And we got two counties being recounted. One of them finished up today. We gained 12 votes. We're now
cool.
29. So, we're doing good in that regard. In fact, I'm thinking about calling up Leonard Anderson and asking him, look, why don't you just call off the other count, man? You know, be honorable, lose with grace, and do the right thing. You know, think I should call him?
Yeah, why not?
I think so. You know, I mean, hell, he's a human being. Maybe he just needs a little bit of good advice.
Or better than that, issue a press release.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool. But the count's liable to start tomorrow at noon. You know, I don't know if I got time to wait for them newspaper people. I think a personal call would be better. I mean, what the hell can he say? No? You know.
Yeah, true enough. Yeah, true enough.
Somebody told me no once. You know, I think I could get used to no.
It wouldn't be the first time.
No, it would not. No, it would not. But that Bob was a great call. Jim was a great call. I mean, that Bob guy from Japan, did he
yeah.
say he is a preacher or he's about to become a preacher?
No, he's about to become a deacon in his church.
Okay, which church is that?
The Episcopal or Anglican.
Okay. Well, if he comes back to the States, you know, I might say, you know, I'm not a real churchy kind of guy.
Yeah, but see, it's that kind of...
Sure, I might consider joining that one. I like.
Well, yeah, you give me a church full of folks like Robert, I can go to church.
Yeah, like I said, I think I could get behind that one. I think I could get behind that one. Well, I've tried several others, and they failed miserably. But Robert's church, I might, you know.
Yeah, because, see, that's like, yeah, I mean, that's like me. I mean, I'll never get my bowling score high enough to get me into heaven.
No, me neither. Me neither. I went, you know, I used to belong to a bowling, I used to work for Boeing Aircraft, and they had a bowling league, and they asked me, you know, would I join? I said, yeah, that sounds like a good time. Well, these guys were so serious about winning, it wasn't fun, you know. And, I mean, I wasn't that great a bowler. I just went to have a good time and drink beer and, you know, have a good time.
Then do what you do at a bowling alley.
Huh?
And do what you do at a bowling alley.
Yeah.
Drink beer, throw the ball, eat greasy fried food,
and laugh.
Go home happy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, drive your cholesterol up, you know, the good things in life, you know. But these things, it was so important to win that, you know, I mean, if you went up there and you threw a gutter ball, I mean, my God, they tried to get you fired and stuff. I dropped out. I mean, you know, I say, hell, I'll, you know, I don't know, I'll find something else to do, ping pong or something. I don't know.
This sounds like my experience with Rotary.
Oh, I can imagine. You were
belong
to the Rotary?
Not only did I belong, I got drummed out, Wayne. I got drummed out of Rotary.
Did they cut your buttons off and stuff and break your...
Oh, yeah. And yeah, made a little line there with their little... and they had to walk out of the luncheon.
Yeah. Well, I wish I was...
No fruit cup, you know.
That's funny. Bob Kincaid in the Rotary. Oh, my God. There's a song there or something. But anyway, Bob, my main point was, you know, I wanted to call you up about this football commissioner junk. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, you think we should make him an offer, you know, resign today, you're... football commissioner tomorrow, buddy.
Well, hell, if it keeps him from ever running for office, I'll let him be commissioner of football, baseball, basketball, and hockey all at once.
Well, exactly. But we have to, well, I don't know. We got to give George baseball after we impeach him. You know,
oh, he can be
quiet, you know. Don't you think?
Yeah, don't they have some sort of professional league that's headquartered in The Hague? Because that's where I want George Bush. I want George Bush in The Hague.
Well, he could run that from his cell. What the hell, mafia figures still run their families from inside. You know,
NFL Europe.
There you go. Hey.
The Amsterdam Admirals. It's not that far.
Well, exactly. Then, you know, then maybe the Steelers could play them for the true world championship.
Hey, no, hey, Wayne, thanks. Thanks a lot, man.
Things there.
Yeah, there is.
Okay, buddy.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right, pal. Bye.
Bye now. See, this is what happens. I shot my mouth off early when I... Sure. Sure. Let Jebby be NFL commissioner. Let's let Neil be NBA commissioner. Who needs David Stern? And George, commissioner of NFL Europe, from his cell in The Hague. God, it smacks of genius, does it not? We'll be back with the final hour of this Wednesday prayer meeting edition of Head On after the top of the hour news, as brought to you by our compadre Bruce Birch. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. House leaders of both parties stood in rare election year unanimity Wednesday, demanding that the FBI surrender documents it took and then remove agents involved in the weekend raid of a congressman's office. House Speaker Dennis Hastert and Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said in a statement that the Justice Department must immediately return the papers it unconstitutionally seized. The leaders said that the congressman, William Jefferson, a Louisiana Democrat, should then cooperate with the investigation. Both parties have protested the Saturday night search of Jefferson's office on Capitol Hill, which they said violated the Constitution's separation of powers doctrine. FBI agents searched Jefferson's office in pursuit of evidence in a bribery investigation. The search warrant, signed by U.S. District Judge Thomas Hogan, was based on an affidavit that said agents found $90,000 in cash stashed in the freezer of Jefferson's home. Under intense bipartisan fire from Capitol Hill, Veterans Affairs Secretary Jim Nicholson said Wednesday he was outraged by his agency's decision to keep the theft of veterans' personal data quiet for 2 weeks. Nicholson said, quote, "I will not tolerate inaction and poor judgment when it comes to protecting our veterans," end quote. He said that he asked the department's inspector general to expedite an investigation to determine who was responsible for the time delay in revealing the burglary. "You're doing a heck of a job, Nikki." The White House press secretary, Tony Snow, said Bush had, quote, "full faith and confidence," unquote, in Nicholson. Snow originally had declined to issue a statement of support in the president's name, but then said he wanted to clarify his remarks. As concerns build over increased tensions between the United States and Iran, some Democrats in Congress are beginning to mount opposition to a preemptive nuclear strike, according to a RawStory.com report. Members of the House Democrats' Progressive Caucus are holding unofficial hearings and gathering signatures for a letter to President Bush in hopes, they say, of attenuating the risk of nuclear confrontation. Responding to reports that phone companies are turning over records related to Americans' telephone calls to the National Security Agency, the American Civil Liberties Union today launched a 20-state Don't Spy on Me campaign to end government surveillance programs they claim are illegal. ACLU affiliates in 20 states today filed complaints with public utility commissions or sent letters to state attorneys general and other officials demanding investigations into whether local telecommunications companies allowed the NSA to spy on their customers. You're listening to News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
Citizens Commission on Human Rights brings you this word of caution about the side effects of psychiatric drugs on children. Glenn McIntosh's daughter reacted adversely to a drug she was given for depression.
Her personality changed, her behavior changed, and it became a downward spiral where she would start feeling urges to throw herself out a window.
Get the facts. Report psychiatric abuse. Visit www.cchr.org today. That's www.cchr.org.
A campaign by gun rights activists to make it easier to use deadly force in self-defense is rapidly winning support across the country as state after state makes it legal for people who feel their lives are in danger to shoot down an attacker, whether in a carjacking or just on the street. The law has spurred debate about whether it protects against lawlessness or spurs more crime. Supporters say it's an unambiguous answer to random violence, while critics, including police chiefs and prosecutors, warn that criminals are more likely to benefit than innocent victims. The Senate voted overwhelmingly Wednesday to limit debate on election year immigration legislation, clearing the way for final passage later this week of a bill that calls for tougher border security as well as eventual chance at citizenship for millions of men and women in the country undocumented. The vote to advance that measure was 73-25, 13 more than the 60 needed. Despite the controversy surrounding the bill, the outcome was not a surprise. Even some of the bill's opponents said they were satisfied they had been given ample opportunity over the past week to try and give the bill a more conservative cast. Fighting in rugged southern Afghan mountains killed at least 24 militants and 5 Afghan forces, while the U.S. military acknowledged Wednesday that the Taliban have grown in strength and influence in recent weeks. The violence came after a week of some of the most deadliest violence since the Taliban regime's ouster in 2001. As many as 336 people have died, mostly militants, according to Afghan and coalition figures. The tiny Gulf state of Qatar, famed mainly for having the Arab world's largest reserves of natural gas, added another record to its fame Tuesday, one of the world's most expensive telephone numbers. The winning bid was $2.75 million. The winner, who made the highest bid 10 minutes into the auction, declined a request for interviews. 8 people took part in the auction, organized by Qatar Telecom, to help raise funds for charity, paying 3,000 Qatari rials, or $824, per ticket. The number? 666-6666. This has been News from the Horn, the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Right here. And let's go back to some fun prayer meeting stuff. Because I got these stories together and I felt like I was just loaded for bear. Again, do they ever read these headlines before they put them up for people to, other people to read them? Ministry nurtures Christian leadership. This, and bear in mind, this is a story about a couple of religion industry people, you know, some sort of weird fundies. Building a radio station. Ministry nurtures Christian leadership on Dark Continent. Dark Continent. Dark Continent. He'll be sitting on the coals giving drink to poor damned souls. And I'll get a sip in hell from Gunga Din. Dark Continent? Dark. Continent. Dark Continent. And to this day, I still get communications, emails, letters, whatever, phone calls. Bob, why do you insist that these religion industry fundies are all a bunch of closet Klansmen? Dark Continent? I could make it worse. Because I think, you know, when they think about it, they don't think Dark Continent. They think something else. and I'm not going to say it. And this was right out there. I guess this was the organ of the American Family Association or some such. Dark Continent. But that's not the only headline. Oh, no, 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 no. Here's another one. Pro-family leader pleased to find Ohio at bottom of homosexuals list. Pro-family leader pleased to find Ohio at bottom of homosexuals list. Did they really? Did they read these things? Please. Ohio is a bottom? Or are they just so naive and so pure in their faith that they don't get the joke that they're perpetrating upon themselves? This is a story. An Ohio pro-family activist, oh please, says the state should consider it a point of pride that a radical homosexual rights group has ranked Ohio last in the United States in terms of providing special rights to homosexuals and similar groups. Phil Burris of the Cincinnati-based pro-family group, Citizens for Community Values, says one has to understand what the homosexual activists mean when they talk about equality. Because they don't mean equality. They don't mean that they want to be considered equal as Americans and human beings under like the 13th and 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution or none of that. No, sir. I can't believe that there are people that actually talk like this, but there are. What they are really talking about, he asserts, is, quote, special rights, unquote, for homosexual, bisexual, and transgendered people. I'm sorry. Just got it. Never mind. Inside joke. Here's the great quote.
You would be surprised what it...
Yeah, because I realized I was doing my ignorant redneck voice and not my ignorant Ohio voice.
You would be surprised what it is that they really want. What they call equality is for everyone to accept their behavior and for them to have, wait for it, access to our children at a very early age. Promoting homosexuality as normal. Opposing the homosexual activist agenda is what they call intolerance.
Access to our children at a very early age. Promoting homosexuality as normal. God, I can hear this now.
Daddy?
Yes, son.
I know what I want to do when I grow up.
You want to go into the ministry like me, son?
No, Daddy, I want to be a dancer in a Broadway musical someday. It's part of the homosexual agenda. Mommy, can I have some Barbra Streisand albums? Daddy, who's Judy Garland?
That homosexual agenda. Next thing you know, our little boys will be arranging flowers on the dinner table. And wearing properly coordinated clothing. What they're complaining about is that they don't have rights and privileges that override the rest of us who are average working families and people here in the state of Ohio. Do you hear this sick thug? Do you hear this ugly little religion industry fascist? What they're complaining about is that they don't have rights and privileges like people. What they're complaining about is that they don't have rights and privileges like people. There's a song out there from a Broadway musical, incidentally, that says, God's gonna gobble you up and swallow you down, and goodbye to you. And because the majority of the people and their pro-family representatives are opposed to all these things the homosexual activists are demanding, Burris adds, they feel like we're intolerant, so I guess we should wear that as a badge of honor. 50 years ago, see what this does? 50 years ago, this guy would have worn, don't let the sun on you, set on you here, as a badge of honor. They feel like we're intolerant, so I guess they feel like we're racist, so I guess we should wear that as a badge of honor. This guy is no different from Lester Maddox. We have to shine the bright light of truth on them. Because when you hit them with light and truth, they scurry like the cockroaches they are. Let's take a break. Pro-family leader pleased to find Ohio at bottom. No, Agnes. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network. Standing out in front on opening night.
John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
To play the theme from A Summer Place. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's about 24 minutes past the hour as we cruise through this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. And, oh, I'm not done yet. No, no. We know Ohio's a bottom. Headline, California activist gores global warming film taking students, others, on a ride. See, this is the part where I, like, you know, want to kick furniture, hurt my toes, that kind of. Because this is coming from the religion industry, okay? This is coming from the Agape Press. Bob, that's agape. Yeah, I know. But I read this stuff and I just sit there with my mouth agape. Ah, yeah. Well. Nah, they didn't. Yeah, they did. A California pro-family group is criticizing a Los Angeles area high school for busing students to watch former Vice President Al Gore's new movie on the theory of global warming. See, they have to call it the theory of global warming. You get that? It's a theory. The Greenland ice sheet is melting. But it's a theory that it's melting. No, it's not. It's melting. Well, it's melting because it's... No, it's melting because it's getting warmer. Well, it's a theory that it's getting warmer, okay? No, that's not a theory either. But, you know... God. According to the Drudge Report, 50... Okay, see how it starts? You see, according to the Drudge Report, which means it's probably not even true, 1,500 Beverly Hills High School students were to board 30 school buses this morning and be transported across town. This is dated for today by some guy named Jim Brown. Jim Brown? Oh, how far he's fallen. We were just talking about the NFL a little bit ago. Once the premier running back of all time, I mean, the running back's running back, the guy who quit when he was on top of his game, Jim Brown, and now he's writing for the Agape Press. Damn, that's sad. They were transported across town to watch documentary An Inconvenient Truth. Randy Thomason. With the, get this, Sacramento-based Campaign for Children and Families. Help me here, please, somebody. Yeah, you know, a little cold water on the back of the neck and the code, you know, that kind of thing. Why does Randy Thomason of the Sacramento-based Campaign for Children and Families have anything to say about a global warming movie? Is it just me, or is there somewhere in some parallel universe, or one of the antimatter universes, or one of those bizarre string theory and the stuff that physicists talk about, and I can't comprehend it, you know, at all. Is there somewhere where the Campaign for Children and Families has to do at all with whether or not we're destroying the very planet, or the only planet as far as we can tell? Well, it's the only planet as far as the fundamentalists are concerned. You know, these guys still believe that the sun revolves around the earth, for crying out loud. Randy Thomason believes that instead of carting students to view Gore's one-sided take on the issue, schools should be taking a balanced approach to global warming theory. Okay, Randy, buddy, I got your balanced approach, okay? I say that the Greenland ice sheet is melting and stands to raise, what did we find out last night? Yeah, stands to raise water sea levels around the globe. Because it's still a system. Stands to raise ocean levels around the globe by some 20 feet. That's my side of the debate. That the Greenland ice sheet is melting, and when that melts, it's going to put a whole lot of fresh water into the oceans, change ocean current temperatures and raise water levels. That's my side of the debate. And Randy Thomason's side of the debate is what? He wants the balanced approach. See, this is this stupidity that our good friend Joe Vecchio has talked about from time to time, that there are equal and equally meritorious sides to every argument. There aren't! Because the other side of this debate says that the Greenland ice sheet may be melting, but Jesus will freeze it again. Whenever he feels like it. Or this is some part, this is, you know, this is the, I think it talks about this in the Book of Revolutions or else in Flip-Floppians. A balanced approach to global warming theory. High school students deserve a truthful measurement of science, not blatant propaganda. Where's the propaganda? I mean, if somebody, you know, I would think the right wing would get this. Okay, so it's going to cost you the price of a ticket to go and watch the movie. All right. Where's the rest of the money? I mean, the right wing, you know, the corporatists, they understand you don't do anything if there's not a buck to be had in it. Where's the money? There's no money to be had in trying to save the planet, at least not on a short-term basis. Now, there's plenty of money to be had in trying to burn more fossil fuels. You know, we'll pay people to poison us. God, Lucretia Borgia was ahead of her time. Here's this quote. These children would be better served by having an expert for the global warming theory and then an expert against the global warming theory. Hello, I'm an expert against the global warming theory. I'm against the global warming theory because global warming is bad. Thank you. Come to class or even come to the school and debate. You know, but the thing is, this guy's idea of an expert against the global warming theory is somebody who's going to come in there, preferably, you know, somebody who believes that Adam and Eve ate, you know, fried pterodactyl for Sunday dinner. An expert against the global warming theory to balance against an expert for the global warming theory. This is insane. These people are nuts. These people are going to get us killed. And it is cold comfort to me that they're going to get themselves killed in the process. If they were just hurting themselves, it would be one thing, because I'm kind of, you know, sort of a social libertarian about that kind of thing. You know, you ain't hurting anybody else, hurt yourself, I don't care. Philosophically, I care, but it's none of my business. But they don't want to just hurt themselves, they want to hurt us. Which in turn brings out that really Cro-Magnon side of me that makes me want to hurt them! Okay, break time. Agnes says I need to breathe. I'll work on my mantra while we're listening to the labor news. Om, head on, I'm Bob on the Head On Radio Network.
I'm 15 for a moment, caught in between 10 and 20, and I'm just dreaming. Counting the ways to where you are. I'm 22 for a moment, and she feels better than ever. And we're on fire, making our way back from Mars. 15, there's still time for you, time to buy and time to lose. Never a wish better than this, when you only got 100 years to live.
This is the Head On Radio Network Labor Report. I'm Bruce Birch. This morning, local TV viewers in Detroit, Michigan heard eyebrow-raising accusations about union practices. The commercial airing today during Fox 2 News Morning is part of an aggressive $5 million campaign by the Center for Union Facts, a Washington, D.C.-based group that won't disclose its financial backers. The ad is likely to generate controversy in Michigan, a state with deep union roots. Paul Krell, spokesman for the UAW, said, quote, "There are a lot of distortions and half-truths and things taken out of context, and then there are some things that are flat-out wrong in the ads," end quote. Krell said the ads amount to union bashing. The UAW has 1.2 million members nationwide and about 435,000 members and retirees in Michigan. The Department of Energy has revealed a plan to eliminate its Office for Environment, Safety, and Health. The office was created 20 years ago to respond to radioactive contamination of workers as a result of Cold War weapons production. Most of the office's current worker safety and health functions would be transferred to an office dealing with security. The current department is headed by an assistant secretary, a political appointee, whereas the security agency is headed by a career DOE employee. The official reasoning seems a bit bizarre. The department says the reorganization will combine some related functions that are currently separated, like safety and security. Mine safety officials say a sealing material used at a southeastern Kentucky mine where an explosion killed five miners this past weekend is an easy and cost-effective way to contain combustible gases, but others in the industry say the convenience brings danger. Critics say the material, similar to plastic foam, puts miners in danger and should be banned. Rescuers reported that the seals did not withstand the blast on Saturday at the Kentucky Darby Mine No. 1. The foam blocks seal out methane and other gases that occur naturally in previously mined areas, and they are often used instead of conventional concrete blocks. Now, state and federal officials are trying to determine whether the foam seals work as well as concrete. Thousands of protesting workers set fire to six garment factories in Bangladesh yesterday after a colleague was killed and scores injured in clashes with police, witnesses and officials said. They said more than 100 vehicles were damaged in the violence that first erupted on Monday in and around the capital, Dhaka, after factory owners called in police to break up demonstrations by workers demanding better pay and benefits. Angry workers on Monday set fire to three factories in an export zone in Savar, about 25 miles north of Dhaka. Later, they barricaded a highway and attacked buses and trucks. For the Head On Radio Network, this has been the Labor Report. I'm Bruce Birch.
Someone to hear your prayers, someone who cares.
All right, we're back, and we roll downhill toward the close of tonight's program. But that doesn't mean the fireworks stop. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Fritz is calling from New Mexico. Hey, Fritz.
Hey, Bob. Long time.
It has been a long time. How are you?
Great to hear you, too. Just been, you know, and haven't been around while you're on the air, so I've been listening to you on archives. And, you know, this global warming thing, Bob, it's just, it's maddening, isn't it? It's like it's the same old thing, the hell with science. You know, we like what science brings us in our lives, but to hell with science. I mean, the hypocrisy is about as thick as you can get, you know?
Well, yeah, these people who say that, you know, evolution doesn't exist, it can't happen, that kind of thing, and you know, the divine healing types. You know, Jerry Falwell, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago, was in the hospital being saved from pneumonia?
Yeah, right. And I'm sure they didn't put him on a respirator, and I'm sure they didn't use any high technology whatsoever.
Yes, they did to both.
And
you know, and he was saved by people who believe in evolution.
He jumped out of bed and rejected the science that saved his life and said, no, it really didn't. That wasn't science that saved my life.
You know, it was a miracle.
It was a miracle, right. And, you know, Bob, I'll tell you, let me make a prediction here. It's not just global warming, it's global fluctuation. It's climatic fluctuation because of the stress we're putting on the planet. And I'm going to send you a link to my latest article on opednews.com, which is about warming. And the fluctuation, Bob, has to do with, of course, stressing with human-generated excess carbon dioxide and a bunch of other crap we're throwing into the planet. But, you know, we've seen Katrina, we've seen the heat wave in Paris. My prediction is we're going to see excesses in climatic fluctuation. And I'll be damned if I'm wrong about that. If I'm right, then that prediction is based on the science, which says that we're stressing the planet and the planet is rebounding. And so, you know, if obviously we got to be interested in melting of the ice caps, et cetera, but all these other occurrences, all these other quote-unquote unexpecteds are going to become the expected.
Well, the desalination of cold water currents.
Yeah, well, that's the whole deep ocean, the whole the global ocean conveyor belt. Is essentially, you know, it stands, if you read Tom Hartman's writing, he explains it very well, it stands to provoke a new ice age in Europe, possibly. And it's because of the melting of all the fresh water. The other thing that does is it deprives the algae on the surface of deep ocean nutrients. And so photosynthesis goes down. And guess what happens when photosynthesis goes down? Less carbon dioxide is pulled out of the atmosphere, which leaves more up there to increase global warming. It's positive feedback. You know, so it's like all of these little itty-bitty things that seem insignificant are going to get worse and worse, I'm afraid, unless we do something.
Well, you know, and the thing is, if we do something, we, you know, like I noted last night, that one report says that if we adopt Kyoto, if every nation adopts Kyoto Accords now, we see no appreciable change for 100 years.
Yeah, oh yeah. Oh yeah, it's too late to see anything in my lifetime, that's for damn sure. And possibly.
And so we're going to get, yeah, we get colder cold and hotter hot.
Exactly. And we get more intense storms and drier dry as well. There's going to be droughts. There's going to be floods like we saw in New England, more intense storms, hotter hot, and colder cold. Just extremes. We're pushing the planet. The planet is responding.
And see, so, some of this, Fritz, is observational, isn't it? Anybody who has ever had a flu or had the flu understands that the nature of the body's reaction to having a fever is to try to bring on the chills.
That's right. It basically, the body's reaction it comprises a number of changes that are designed to push it to a new state temporarily so it can resolve a fever and then to push it back to a state of equilibrium or homeostasis. You know, that's the natural response of every living system, and the planet Gaia is a living system, and it's just doing the same thing. The thing is that, you know, observation, you know, when you're in denial, Bob, you don't make observations. You know, any observation is always an excuse because you're in denial. And so we're dealing with people in denial. What are you going to do?
Well, I'm ashamed of myself because I have to deal with the concepts of real, live, honest-to-goodness hate, Fritz. And I'm getting to the point where I hate these people.
I understand, Bob. It's very, very difficult for me to deflect those feelings as well. I try.
I mean, these people are willing to gamble. And I mean, I'm not a gambler, but I've sat down to a couple of hands of poker here and there. These people are willing to bet that they've got jack's high garbage in their hand, and that jack, you know, one jack, that's it, you know, everything else, nothing matches. They're willing to bet that, yeah, and that's the rapture. Okay? They're willing to bet not just their lives, but my life and your life and future generations' lives. They're willing to bet all of that on magic.
They certainly are. That, you know, and that's the stuff that makes me craziest, Bob. It's the rapture stuff that makes me craziest. It's like, you know, give up all reason, give up all observation, and don't see your own denial. You know what these people need, Bob? They need 12-step programs. I swear to God, they need 12-step programs. These people need to go to Al-Anon and face their own denial. That's what I think.
Well, do you remember when the Moonies were a real problem and the Krishnas were a real problem, Fritz? And
yeah,
and moms and dads would go and, like, re-kidnap their children and, you know, like 6 weeks of intense deprogramming?
Yeah, I do remember.
That's what we're. I mean, that's what we need for these people.
Yeah, yeah.
Because 20% of the population, if they routinely go out and vote in this republic, can sway the outcome of an election.
Yeah, and that's the truly unfortunate thing. That's why that whole rapture thing is so scary, because they're going to carry that to the polls with them. You know, and as much as I try and focus on love by thinking of the people I love, you're naturally drawn to the other extreme because it's those people you love that are going to be harmed. You got kids. I know that. I know you're worried about your children, and rightly so. Your children are going to have to face global environment in another 30 to 40 to 50 years. And, you know, I don't envy them. I'm kind of glad I'm not going to be around. But I worry about my nieces and nephews. I don't have any kids, but I worry about my nieces and nephews and my brother's kids and, you know, and my grandkids. And, oh, my God. It's like these poor, poor children that are being denied a healthy environment by these people in denial. They need deprogramming and they need Al-Anon. They need 12-step programs. I don't know how the heck we're going to do it, but. You know, all I can tell you, Bob, is try and preserve your own health. Don't go over the edge with them.
Well, I'm trying not to, but there are occasions where I feel like that old line from W.C. Fields, one of those movies. He said, "That woman drove me to drink, a fact for which I am eternally grateful." You know, I can see how people get there.
Yeah, oh yeah, I do, and that's what gets people there. That's what gets people there is the frustration of trying to deal with hypocrisy. You know, and the hypocrisy is so thick in that particular population that you really, you know, you need a shovel. You need a steam shovel. You know, you need a backhoe to get through any of the hypocrisy. It's that thick. Oh, God. Well, I just sent you the link. I hope you enjoy the story. It's, you know, it's about human-generated carbon dioxide as a toxin, and it essentially is a toxin. And so the way we need to think about this is we are toxifying the planet. You know, and the oil and gas honchos come back and say, oh, well, we breathe it out too, so how can it be bad? Excuse me? The part that we breathe out is linked to plants and is linked to the rest of the planet and all those controls that developed over all those billions of years of evolution, over basically 2 billion years of life on the planet, 3 billion years. But of course, if you don't accept evolution, then you don't accept that nexus of controls. And so you can say that the carbon dioxide we breathe out is the same as the carbon dioxide, the extra stuff that we're throwing into the environment. That's the ultimate denial.
Yeah, after all, carbon dioxide's what makes my Dr. Pepper fizz.
Yeah, right, that's right. Yeah, there you go.
It can't be bad, you can drink it.
Can't be bad. I put it down in my gourd every day.
Yeah, and sometimes when I burp it through my nose, it makes my nose tingle. It's kind of fun.
It's got to be good for you. Good for you. Oh, my God, Bob. You got to laugh.
I mean,
you have to, because otherwise you cry. And I know that you're on the verge of tears about it, and so am I. The frustration puts you on the verge of tears.
You know, I test drove just for the fun of it. There's not a rat's chance in the world of me owning it. But I test drove a Toyota Highlander, the SUV,
yeah,
the big thing, because I got a big family.
Yeah, I saw him. Yeah.
I test drove that thing the other day, and we were just going up and down the road. My dad and I said, you know, look at this. You fill up at Citgo, and you buy one of these vehicles, and you're Saudi free.
Yep, that's right.
And it was so amazing. You know, you turn the key all the way over to start, and nothing happens. But you put it in drive, and it just goes, and you go away.
Yeah, I'm on the first Civic Hybrid, actually.
Well, you're going to love it.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
No question. I can't in good faith continue. I mean, you know, my vehicle gets 27 or 28, but it's still not enough. It's not enough. I got to get more. You know, in good
faith. No, I mean, and it's not that hard. We're fairly smart people, Fritz. If we just look at the, you know, how do we cut our usage by... Start easy. Cut it by 25%.
That's doable. That's eminently doable, Bob.
You know, and once you figure out how to cut it by 25, cutting it by all the way down to 50, that's easy too.
Yeah, yeah. Take it a step at a time. You know, and those hybrid vehicles are not pieces of crap. They're perfectly good vehicles.
Oh, my heavenly days, this thing blew my mind, Fritz. You know, again, 60 miles a gallon in an SUV that will carry seven people comfortably.
Right. And comfortably is the word. You know, there's nothing wrong with this car. You're not giving up anything except this stupid, you know, 15 mile to the gallon highway robbery that Exxon wants you to do. You know,
right? And I stomped on the accelerator, and that thing that V6 that's under the hood threw me back in the seat.
Yeah, I've driven a Civic Hybrid with a 4 in it. It's got plenty of pep. You know, it's got plenty of pep.
I mean, I was going across the bridge over the Tennessee River, and the next thing I knew, I was expecting to see flashing lights in my mirror because I looked down and I was doing 90 miles an hour.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Very nice.
And cruising.
Very nice car.
Yeah. And so, you know, we don't have to give, you know, you don't have to give a lot up.
And, you know, Ford finally did it, you know, and if Ford made a hybrid Escape, they made their hybrid SUV, you know, they've known how to do this now for what? 10 years easily? They could have made this.
Yeah, because you don't just bring the new engine on board.
That's correct. They could have made this thing easily 7-8 years ago. They could have put these things on the road. You know, and GM,
but they're making the same mistake they made in the late 60s all over again.
Right. Well, we remember those electric cars that GM put out and screwed everybody on. That whole story makes me mad. It makes me insane to hear that story, the California story.
Oh, yeah. I'm well familiar with it.
Yeah.
You can't have your car anymore.
Right.
Fritz, thanks so much. So good to hear from you. I trust you're doing well otherwise.
Yeah, I'm hanging in, Bob, hanging in. You know, life's crazy, as I told Agnes, a lot of changes, but, you know, you flex with them because, as your dear wife said, if you resist them, you know, they'll tear you up, so you got to go with them.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, being enlightened people, we're flexible.
You got to be. In this world,
you don't bend, you snap.
I'm talking to you.
All right, take care, Fritz.
Yeah, you too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend Fritz in New Mexico, a scientist. Not a fake phony scientist, a real scientist who understands the meaning of, you know, science. Let's go to Ben calling in from Elgin, Illinois. Hey, Ben, you're head on.
Well, you know, the one thing that is most significant about rising carbon dioxide levels, and we can, in fact, see evidence of this in the geologic past when there have been rising carbon dioxide levels due to, you know, volcanic activity, is that it acidifies the ocean. There's a reason they call it carbonic acid when you mix CO2 and water. It is acidic. That's the reason that seltzer water will help you clean a grill. Is because it's a weak acid.
And why it stings when it goes down your gullet.
Exactly right. And as you acidify the ocean, there are a number of very fragile bits of, microflora and microfauna that are very sensitive to having the exact pH level they've become accustomed to over millions of years. And you will progressively decimate those populations and, in fact, change the entire ecology of the ocean. And when you look at places where ocean water becomes very acidic, like the Black Sea, the reason the Black Sea is black is because as you get down about 50 or 60 feet from the surface, you reach a strata, a layer, at which below which all the water is very acidic, and all the water is essentially anoxic. It has got no oxygen in it. So you can, like, find Roman shipwrecks down at the bottom of the Black Sea that haven't, been decayed whatsoever.
Yeah, perfectly composed.
In the last 2,000 years, they're still sitting there like they had just sunk. And that is because the Black Sea is so acidic at below that strata, below that level, that that there's essentially no life. And that is what we are heading towards in the oceans as a whole if we continue to increase the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
And you understand that, and I understand that, and this goofball in California says we need a balanced viewpoint of what acid does to water.
Well, you know, I'd love to put him in some very acidic water and see how he fares.
Well, he'd expect a miracle to occur, Ben.
Yeah. I'd be happy to sit there and pray for him. You know, I'll sit there with him in acidic water.
You wouldn't be doing it in the proper Christian humble spirit, Brother Ben.
Well, I've got a rosary. You know, I'll pray for him. I don't think it'll do much good as the flesh starts to come off his bones, but, you know.
Maybe it'll make him feel better in the process.
It might. Well,
it's like George Carlin says, it's a lift in your shoes.
Absolutely.
Hey, Ben, have a wonderful evening.
You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And our good friend Jim is back for just a moment. Hey, Jim, welcome back.
Hey, just one moment there. You know, it's dovetailing on what was said by several callers. You know, this these changes that are occurring in the oceans of the world are impacting adversely upon the food chain, too.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm sure they may have said that because I lost you there for a while. But, you know, I honestly think that the people who don't care about this are taking the same attitude that French king, Louis XV, said. You know, the state will last thy reign, and after me, the storm. And after that, they don't care.
I don't think they do. Like I said, they don't even have a pair of deuces, and they're betting against the house that they're going to disappear in the clouds before the storm starts.
I don't know what their mindset is, but I can tell you one thing: Louis XV had it right, because within 30 years, his grandson lost his head, and the whole thing fell down around him. You know, it's the same thing. And at least he had the sense to realize that the end was coming. He said, it'll last as long, you know, until I die, but after that, it'll be gone. And that's basically
well said.
The thing that's happening to the political and the ecological structure of this world. That's my only comment for tonight.
Well, thank you very kindly, Jim. I appreciate it.
All right.
Well said.
Good night, sir.
Good night. You know, that's one of the, you know, all this manifest hissy being thrown by the religion industry, right, about the Da Vinci Code. Oh, it challenges their most sacred beliefs. Well, what about the Left Behind series? The Da Vinci Code's one stinking book. The Left Behind series has sold as many or more than the Da Vinci Code is, and it's got a whole bunch of people convinced that they're going to be toddling along in their SUV one day, and they're going to shoot straight through the sheet metal. You want dangerous? There's dangerous. It's not dangerous to my beliefs. That's dangerous to my reality. How am I supposed to... Oh, never mind. Let's knock off for the night. A very happy birthday to our good friend Bob in North Dakota. And many happy returns. The show tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, and ably so. Love the prayer meeting music, dear. Announced by Brian Reznor. John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is our chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Randy Kerbway is our on-site engineer. Ben Birch of WhiteRoseSociety.org. streams this program and all the other programs on the Head On Radio Network. He archives these programs as well, and many other fine liberal talk programs wander by. The show happens, and every show on the Head On Radio Network happens, by virtue of the efforts and dedication of the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They're building the American dream, and by supporting the growth of the Head On Radio Network, they're helping to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.